You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
What's up, Launch Street? Tamara here. Are you in for a wild and relevant ride today? So this podcast is part one of a two-part series where I dig into the primal mind, how it is holding us back, the constraints that it creates, and how to overcome it or harness it to be that stronger innovator, leader, human being. Now, this conversation that you're about to listen to was so rich and so energizing that it went on for, an hour and 20 minutes. So I broke it up into two parts. Now, all I can tell you is at the very end, I equate the primal mind to online dating. Believe me, it makes perfect sense. That's how we're going to end this episode, and that's how we're going to start the second part of this series. I'm super excited to bring this new format to you. More to come on what it is, but I promise you, you'll get a ton of value out of it. So let's do it.
Well, hello everyone on Launch Street. I have what I would consider, an incredible treat for us moving forward on this podcast. So as many of you know, I read a ton. But what you don't know is where I get my book suggestions from. And that is my friend Derek, who is actually here with me today, and I'll have him introduce himself in a second. But I often get questions around not just what I'm reading, but what I'm learning out of it, how it impacts how I think about my personal life, my professional life, how it helps me kind of grow and evolve as a human being. So one of the things that Derek and I thought we would do is, because I get all my books from you anyway, is actually do kind of a book club podcast, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to kind of talk about some key concepts. We're going to break it down. We're going to have a conversation about it. And we're going to hopefully give you a ton of value and some new mental frameworks and thinking that can help impact your life. And just, Derek, before you say hi, I have to say that I think part of the reason this started is every time our teams get together with us, they get super annoyed with us because you and I go off on these tangents.
Yes, we do.
On these different concepts, and they're over there like, can we just focus on the task at hand? We have some objectives for this meeting. Oh, and you and I are like, yeah, but we got to talk about the primal mind and slow and fast thinking. And but I think you and I know that those concepts really matter in the work, not just the work that we do, but life too. So without further ado for the audience, why don't you take a second and say hi and introduce yourself, and then we will dig into what is without a doubt going to be probably one of the most lively podcasts I've ever done.
Well, thanks, Tamara. I'm Derek Kuhn. I own a company called Brility Digital. I have been, since 2001, a serial entrepreneur, owning a number of businesses, six or seven at last count, and both technology, but also things like a sub shop, which was, you know, a learning experience, as we like to say it in my
team. You mean like sandwich sub shop?
Yeah, sub shop. Yeah, yeah. It was called Good Sense, and it was out from it was a Nebraska chain, I think. And lots of lessons learned, right? But the primary focus has been technology, from custom development to web design, and then to now digital marketing and really digital strategy on top of that, you know, incorporating all the lessons learned. And then, as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of brilliant ideas out there. I am a voracious reader like you are.
I mean, you're much more than me even.
Well, I don't know.
Three times.
I mean, it's pretty close, right? and the idea is, you know, there's a lot of value. Two things: the marketplace changes, technology is impacting everything, and the rate and level of change is increasing on both fronts. That makes life challenging. The other thing is these concepts can be critical to moving things ahead personally and professionally. But the challenge is, and why we both get asked to discuss books, is that there's more bad ideas out there, or platitudes that are passed along, folklore, yeah. Business folklore.
That's
it drives
total
me wild.
BS.
And a total BS. And I have had the misfortune, or now fortune, I suppose, of pursuing these platitudes or these business folklores, and then finding at the end of the road that it caused a lot of harm and difficulty and unnecessary work. And so, you know, in getting those distinctions and in learning those lessons, it's given a different filter to apply to all these different concepts that come out, some of which are incredibly valuable, but you can't take them at face value. You need to think them through, find out how to implement, and then evaluate how good it is. So I am incredibly excited to have to share this thinking and this experience with you, because, iron sharpens iron. Have you heard that? Right? Uh-huh. So this is
one that we agree in, right?
Yeah, right, totally.
We're okay
right,
with exactly. that platitude.
Yep. Yeah, right, exactly.
What's your least favorite one? Like, which of all the BS out there, and it may not be the time, I know what we're going to be talking about, the primal mind, because that is, I think Derek and I would agree, at the foundation of all the transformation, all the work, and I think it's so important to understand for all of us. But just quickly, what's your least favorite, or the one that you think is the most bullshit, I guess?
I think the most bullshit that I see that drives me crazy is when people are encouraged to do one of two things, but I have a real bone to pick about how most people do goal setting, or when they talk about mission, vision, and values. What I see people do with goals, they spend about zero, maybe 5 minutes. They spend more time on a vacation planning than they do on figuring out what their drivers are. And really, you know, and there's a disconnect. Most people don't understand themselves, and then they'll look to the person left or right of them and then just pick something. And again, just like bad ideas, at the end of that road of a goal you just picked somewhat arbitrarily or without true introspection, it's a disaster. So the encouragement to do these simple things that sort of give you a sense of direction, but they aren't meaningful and they haven't been well thought out, I feel that is a big mistake, and it sets people on the wrong path with a false sense of security that they're doing something right. So that drives me wild.
So here's my least favorite phrase right now is when people use the word authentic to say, like, you have to be authentic and transparent.
Yep.
But what's authentic to me is not the same as to you. So that is a generalized statement.
Yep.
And I think not just on a personal level, but also on a business level too. And companies say, well, we need to be authentic. Well, if you don't know what you stand for, how the fuck are you supposed to be authentic?
Right.
I said I would not swear. I've done it twice. I'm going to bring it down.
We got to keep it authentic.
Yes, that's right. That's my authentic self.
Right.
It just drives me nuts. Or step into your power or level up or any of those, because I think that it's a little bit like a goal. They don't mean anything,
right. But
they sound so catchy.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And it's a trap.
It's a trap. And you sound good around the water cooler or the coffee
maker, good.
Right? You can say these platitudes, and then there's a complete disconnect from the reality of the situation. And are you implementing those ideas or doing anything with them?
Right. You're not. Yep. That's because you don't know how are you supposed to do those things if you don't even know what they mean?
Right, exactly.
All right, so I went off on a tangent already. But so the first concept that Derek and I wanted to dig into, and I think we both read a book recently that we found really valuable, is the whole concept, the reality actually behind the primal mind. And I think there's been a little bit of talk out there about the lizard brain, the chatter in our head that, you know, is the negative chatter. But it really goes a lot deeper than that and has a lot bigger impact than just negative thoughts. And so there were three books that I think impacted this conversation, and probably actually more, but we wanted to focus on three just to rein us in a little bit. One is Persuasion Code, How Neuromarketing Can Help You Persuade Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. The other one is Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman.
Kahneman.
Yeah. I was like, I'm not going to say this right. I knew it.
Yeah, winner of a Nobel Prize, right?
Yeah, okay. And Deep Work, which I actually don't have in front of me, but is also an excellent book. So let's start with this, though, because the primal mind is going to be new to some people. Not everyone's heard about it or researched it to the depth that we have. So let's talk a little bit about what the primal mind is, because what blew me away in the research I've been doing recently, and I think, as you know, a lot of that's because I deal with innovation, which is ultimately dealing with people's willingness to change and think differently.
Right.
And the primal mind controls so much more. Oh my God, it controls so much more than I ever thought. And it's gotten me, honestly, Derek, thinking about every day, I'm like, who's in control of my brain right now?
Right.
Is it me or is it that primal brain that's just on autopilot and I don't even know it?
Yeah, most things don't get through to the conscious mind or the neocortex, right? The real distinction is that people don't make decisions. We don't think the way we think we do. Right. We don't make decisions the way we think we do either. And the reason is the primal mind is really the concept that the human being evolved to have a different set of mental functions than we know about. You've heard of the lizard brain, right?
Yep.
A lot of people talk about that. Then we have the limbic system, which is, you know, primarily emotions, right? So we have lizard brain is the oldest survival mechanism. It's fighting, it's reproducing, those kinds of things.
Isn't that the fight?
Yeah, the three F's. Well, I thought we weren't swearing, right? Right.
Well, we'll call something else.
Yeah, right.
Fight, eat, or
yeah, fight, food. Yeah, right.
Right. Fight, food, or
be intimate, right?
Romance.
Right. So those two things, those two are together called the primal mind. You know, we've had emotions before we were bipedal. So before we were upright as humans and walking around, emotions, they are core to our function. They are things that like regulate heartbeat, right? They sweat, the autonomic nervous system and the primal mind are interwoven, and they are a core part of us. And then you have the new kid on the block, which is the neocortex. And the neocortex is the conscious thinking mind, right? It's what we call the rational mind is another word for it. Daniel Kahneman in his book says system one is the equivalent of the primal mind, and system two is the conscious thinking mind.
And system one is the fast, and system two is the slow, hence why it's called thinking fast and slow. But here's what I find fascinating about all that is, because you said in the beginning, we don't make decisions the way we think we do. We don't even think the way we think
do.
What I sometimes find it hard to do is to distinguish which brain is in control, right? Like I know when I'm in fight or flight,
right?
Like severely, or I know when I've been triggered by somebody who sets me off and my heart rate goes up, right? I start to sweat a little bit. Like, and I think what is really important for us to understand with the primal mind is how it is the same as it was in the days where we were worried about a saber-toothed tiger in the bushes as it is now when the bigger threat, right, is in the boardroom.
Right.
So our environment's drastically different, but our brain is treating things
exactly
the same way. So I think when I think about a meeting I'm in and I get a challenging question from you that I can't answer, my primal brain's like, I got you.
Right.
Like, let me take care of this. And I'm like, oh no, I should probably be thinking right now, but I can't because my primal brain isn't even letting it through.
Right. Yeah. That's a great point. So the primal mind, our great, great ancestors, the ones that, when they heard a twig snap or they saw a danger, they ran, right?
Yeah.
And that is a stress response. A stress response increases our capability for physical action. So climbing trees, throwing rocks, running, fighting. That shuts down the neocortex and the thinking mind. So the real challenge is the primal mind is getting triggered left and right on things that actually aren't a life and death threat, but the body.
It's a challenging question I don't know, a boyfriend that didn't call you back or whatever.
Right, or an email that you like that sends you into this, in the challenges.
Yeah, into a total tizzy. Yeah.
And the problem with that is stress and that kind of a reaction is designed to narrow your focus, not increase creative, thoughtful approaches to things. So that response, the primal mind being triggered all over the place, is creating a reduction in the ability to do critical thinking, creativity, or innovation, or any kind of rational thought.
Well, and any good decision, right? Because your ability to even decide something simple gets diminished over time.
That's right.
I had something, now I lost it, so keep talking.
Okay.
it was right there and then I lost it.
And to maybe provide a good metaphor, one of the ways we liken it is that, first of all, we make tens of thousands of decisions a day. Sometimes the number is contested.
It was like 30,000.
It's like 35,000, right? And the thing, here would be a good way to think about it. When you're driving to work, it's a route that you normally use. When is the time that your rational mind gets engaged, right? It's when there's something unexpected.
Right, when something lights, out of the norm.
All those other decisions, speeding up, braking, turning, are all done unconsciously. So that is system one in action. So the vast majority of decisions don't even
They don't register.
They don't get to the conscious awareness. So you don't even realize as a thinking being how many decisions are being made without you. You know, another good metaphor we like is there's a bouncer at a club,
I love that
right?
One. Yeah.
Yeah, and so there's this huge line. If you think about we take digital marketing, for example, we are bombarded with over 100,000 messages a day. I mean, tell me which one you saw last, right?
I don't know.
So the primal mind is the guardian of rational thought, and there's a good reason for that. The neocortex, the brain itself, is 8% of the body weight. It consumes 20% of the energy. It is an expensive V8 gas-guzzling machine. So in order, again, our ancestors needed to survive so they couldn't overthink things. They needed to be able to run, fight, and all these things. So, you know, there is a pre-wired, hardwired system in us that makes most of the decisions and tries to avoid spending any unnecessary energy. That's why it's hard. People are looking for the simple answer, is the bottom line. But it's not the conscious mind's fault. It is how we are. It's just like a heartbeat. It is part of us.
So here's what I find fascinating about that. A note that I took earlier when I was reading Persuasion is, so let's use your typical day for anyone working at a job, right? You get up, you have your coffee, you watch the news, you drive to work, your same route every single day, you get to work, you deal with basically the same, what you perceive as the same challenges every day, the same people, the same frustration, the same opportunity. Then you come home, same route back home, right, and your evening starts. Here's where I find it interesting. So most of that is the primal mind, because it's like, been there, done that, my job to keep your energy going, right? To keep that system two from overload, because it takes a ton of energy to run that brain. The challenge with it is, and this is where I've caught myself on a day-to-day basis, is it is really hard to adapt with the changing times. If I'm not consciously thinking to myself and actively looking for every day opportunities to do it differently. So just because the primal mind is also like filtering out, right? All the things it doesn't think is relevant to you.
Right.
But that may not be what's actually relevant or not relevant to you. So it's deciding what gets into your brain and what doesn't for you to pay attention to register, to think about. But there are so many opportunities to innovate or adapt or whatever you want to change, whatever you want to say. But because we're on autopilot, we don't see it. So it's until someone smacks us in the face and goes, we need disruption, and whatever, that's your personal life or your professional. But the opportunities are all there, but we're too busy being shut down to see it.
Yep, absolutely. And the reason behind it helps understand a little bit of how to counter, which we can talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
But we evolved not to see the truth, not to understand our environment, but to survive and to reproduce. So this thing that is as old as us, our primal line, our innate wiring, like how our digestion works, our heart rate, is built for one thing only. Now, enter 10,000 years ago, civilization comes along, and suddenly the game changes. A lot of the things that we were built to only care about, I mean only care about, suddenly are getting in the way of progress. So that's where the rational mind, they're really the key. And you see this in meditations, you know how popular meditation is, right? Do you like to meditate?
So I'm supposed to say yes.
All right, like everybody else.
Yeah,
right?
And the reality is...
Are you sophisticated tomorrow?
No, I'm not that cool. The reality is I've not yet been able to do it in a way that doesn't just make me fall asleep.
Right,
Honestly, my brain goes, and we were talking about this earlier, maybe we'll have a chance to get into this about burning hot or being off.
Right.
But no, so the answer is no. I cannot get it to work for me.
You know, in the East... They saw this problem. They saw that we had a mismatch between civilization as we know it now, and even the emergence of it, and this primal mind, the mismatch. There's a definite breakdown between what we evolved to do and are pre-programmed, and then the way civilization is going. That's where meditation, the concepts came from. It was their answer to it. And it's not a great one. It's very hard. But so to your point about the need to have critical thinking, absolutely, it is here. It is more important than ever now because things are incredibly complex.
Yeah.
The world is a complex polarization. So what does the primal mind do? If we look at that bouncer, and you know, your rational mind is inside the club, what gets ushered in is something that is not difficult. People are looking for the easy answer.
Right.
So the primal mind's job is like, okay, we're going to ignore... Well, that looks really hard, right? That looks really
hard. Too much
energy. Too much energy. We can't afford that because that's how we survive. Those are in our genes. That is in our wiring. So what do they let through? The simple answers. The answers that allow figure it out and then produce that safety that comes upon online now. So you're not spending a lot of energy. So yeah, it's a huge problem. It's one of humanity's greatest, in my opinion.
Well, and I think, so I was telling you before we sat down to do the podcast that I went and saw Thomas Friedman speak last night, and he was phenomenal. And he was talking about the fact that we're at this meltdown point where everything's being shaken up across the globe, right? Political parties are being shaken up, climate change is happening, technology is accelerating. So we're dealing with not just change, but all of this convergence of change at all these different levels at the same time. And he showed this graph that was talking about, so first on the graph is the acceleration of technology, which is a like really sharp hockey stick up. And then it shows how humans gradually evolve, especially like how our adaptation, and it's very gradual. So on one hand, you've got almost a flat line of how we evolve with our times and this massive technology change that's happening, whether we like it or not. And that's in everything. That's just not like the latest and greatest tech coming out of Silicon Valley. It is our entire lives, right, is based on tech now. Yeah. I think the stat I heard last night was 51% of our lives is based online now. 51%, yeah. Like over 50%. It's crazy. But the reason I bring that up is I think part of the reason we're so gradual and steady is because the primal mind's in control. And if I look at the people around me, and I would put you in this camp, absolutely, who are able to keep up or even get excited by the acceleration of change we're facing, I think it's people who understand the balance in their heads and how to manage it in a way where they get control of it and can push that bouncer aside.
Right.
And it's the ones that are stuck with the bouncer front and center getting bigger. Yeah. And in fact, that bouncer is almost getting fatter and fatter and covering more of the door as more scary stuff comes out at them.
Yep.
So I think that's the big distinction that I see in people around me.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, I love that idea. And to go a little bit further on the bouncer, you know, the default bouncer, like what we are born with, it has the wrong VIP list on who to let in, right? So it is for those that are inclined and aware of this, you can train or give that bouncer a different list of things that are important. Like we talked about the RAS.
Yep. That's the reticular activating system for those.
Yep, the reticular. So, and that will let people, so you can, instead of fighting, you'll never win a fight with system one versus system two. If you do, it is very short lived. So
the one's never going to go away, right?
System one's never going to go away.
That's actually, sorry to interrupt you. Just really quickly on that, I just want to say that I think that's the mistake a lot of us make is we think, oh, I'm just going to override. Yeah. I'm going to take control of it completely and make it go away. It's like daring to be fearless. Fear is hardwired into us.
Right,
so it's not going to go away, but there is a way to manage it.
Yeah. It's Kahneman, I believe, says the thinking mind is a calculator against a full-powered computer. It can do a couple things and it can do them well, but it will never win. That's why, I mean, willpower. Look, we've had more food options now than ever.
Oh my God.
Everyone knows how to eat. It's an obesity epidemic. How do you have an epidemic that is created from an abundance of resources?
We have more food than we know what to do with.
Right, exactly.
Like we don't need to hoard food.
No.
It's everywhere. Yeah. In fact, you and I were just talking about last night, because both of us do a keto diet, basically. And both
keto
of us.
Keto AF, that's me.
Keto AF, that's right. Right? But both of us went off the wagon last night for different reasons and feel it today. So I feel like that's very relevant.
Yeah. So I think that the idea is you can't use willpower our system two will never be system one. But system two can train system one. So that any good sport, we're not built with the ability that we don't inherently can play great tennis, but over time you can train things. And so that's where the conscious incompetence, then conscious competence, and then unconsciously good at something, that is transferring learnings from the thinking mind into the primal mind. So there is a possibility out there from a personal viewpoint to readjust yourself, but it isn't a one and done, and it isn't an override. It is a retraining, making sure you understand how we actually work versus this illusion that we have where I can tell myself what to do and I will do it. That is just patently ridiculous. If you just look around, and there's no evidence to see that method works, nor is it neurochemically, they track it. It can't win in the long term.
I think this is what you're saying is a lot of the reason why goals and affirmations don't work, because, and I used to do this all the time. I'll just get personal about it. I'd be like, I weigh 145 pounds. We all know I don't. because
right?
I don't.
You look great.
Thank you. But I don't weigh 145 pounds. But if I were trying to lose weight, right, that would be the sticky note on my bathroom mirror. And, you know, I run a $5 million business because that's the next goal I want to get to, right? But my bodyguard, my bouncer, my primal brain's like, liar.
Right.
So it doesn't even get in. And I think we all feel like we feel this out of alignment that happens because we're saying what we think we should say. And it's like the whole fake it till you make it, which is like the most BS ever in my book. It drives me. That one really
I should have said that one. Right?
What's that?
I should have said that.
Yeah,
that is one of the worst.
God, that drives me crazy. I'm all for being optimistic. I'm extremely optimistic. But the idea that you could just fake it is to me.
Right.
But your brain doesn't allow you. So I think that's oftentimes why, whether that's a personal and professional goal, why it doesn't work, because your bouncer's like, nope.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, probably the reason I struggle with goal setting, now that you say that, is exactly that. It is a system to selected goal, and there is no alignment of the total human being in it. The primal line has not bought in. Therefore, since where are most of the decisions made? Where's most of the action taken? What even gets through then to the conscious mind? The primal mind. So if you don't get buy-in, because you're out here in La La Land in the ivory tower thinking you're going to like
push it away.
Yeah, it's disconnected from any real chance of change.
So I got two questions for us. But the first one is, I know we've had discussions about this a little bit in the past, but one is what I find fascinating, and I think I was telling you this when we all got together for the escape room, which is something else we will discussing. We are throwing our teams under the bus in a big way.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I love you guys.
What is their fault?
No. We didn't win.
Right.
Not that we're competitive. So is what I find fascinating, is, and I want listeners to actually pay attention to this in their life, because I have found this an awesome experiment just to get a grasp of the primal mind and seeing it in action. So I had a friend who was very upset about something at the gym, and she went ballistic. At the same time, we were trying to have an event for a friend, and she couldn't get out of her brain to be happy for a moment for this person to celebrate their birthday. She was too busy being upset, right? So we've seen it, like someone gets triggered by something and then they go like, you know, you see fight or flight,
right?
Yeah, they go apeshit, right? You see fight or flight, like they're in their head and they cannot get out of it. I'm sure they're dizzy and seeing red, like I've been there too. Yeah. So that's one example of the primal brain, not just being a bouncer, but totally in control in an extreme scenario. The flip side is, I've seen other people in almost the exact same trigger moment be able to be upset about something that happened, but then also be able to be like, okay, I'm going to put that away for a moment because I know I'm not being rational and I'm going to go do this. And then I'm going to go back and understand why I'm feeling this way. So it seems like, hopefully I'm making sense here, but it seems like some people have the primal brain that's in control, and then their executive brain justifies why they did whatever they did, right? So they're like, well, I was angry, I was upset, they were wrong, I just needed a moment, now I'm happy, yay, right? Where there's other people who go, wait, hold on, why am I feeling like this? Why did what Derek said triggered me? And how do I deal with this in a way that actually makes more sense and not let the bouncer and the primal brain take control?
Right.
And I'm fascinated to hear your perspective on it too, because I think for all of us, it's a really fascinating exercise to watch people in action, because you can see it, right? You can see the person who can't control it, and you can see the person that can.
Yep. Yeah. That's a great observation. And the nuance I would put on there is, I think that, you know, if we, I love metaphors, right? So primal mind thinks in metaphors and images. It cannot read the written word. So I try to think of these things with moving pictures or metaphors or examples. But if you think about your primal mind like a giant German Shepherd or a huge dog, right? If you leave it out of control in its default state, it's going to bite things, shit everywhere, be a pain in the ass, right?
Get into the garbage.
Right,
that was a note to my dog. It's not listening.
If you train it well, then it will, that's what emotional regulation, like children, for example, have an untrained, they have very little.
Yeah.
Now, the real trick though, in those situations, that is I think an important distinction is, there's a biochemical component to all of those things. You have very limited reservoirs to exert that So if it isn't trained, you're trying to wrestle with yourself. She may have be exhausted from stress in other areas or had to make a bunch of decisions the other day. So something's
not one moment.
That's right. It's not one moment.
Right.
And I think some people have a better handle on that than others, but it is much more variable than we give it credit for, like not enough sleep or fill in the blanks. So the biochemistry of the brain and the human plays the biggest role in that scenario. The mistake I see people make is they try to say, I'm going to tell myself what to do. Kahneman, in his book, he actually says if it was a movie, the star of the movie is system one, primeline. And the supporting role, this is hard for people to accept. The supporting role is actually the conscious mind. And so that's a tough thing to accept. And when it blows up like that, it becomes more obvious. But I would even say the person who's in control is still more regulated by the primal mind than anyone realizes, than they realize. They're just not totally out of control.
So let's talk a little bit about how to get past the primal, because you're talking about the VIP list. And, you know, in Thinking Fast and Slow, what really caught my attention and one of the things that made a big impact was, okay, so I get why we have fast, but I got to get to slow too.
Right.
So how do I make sure that fast isn't always driving and push that balance a little bit aside versus letting them get fatter?
Yeah, no, so that's a great mind. So maybe I'll approach this from a little bit about what we do for companies when we attempt to reach more customers and grow. It's a little easier to understand there. When you need to get through, so the number one way to get through the primal mind and get full brain engagement, without a doubt, is fear. So fear is it. Fear, you know, you've heard a study, people will do 2.5 times more, right, fear-based than they will ever for gain.
We'll move away from pain. We're way more motivated to move away from pain than we are to move towards pleasure, which is, I think, the opposite of what most of us think.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And again, if you look at where that came from, you had to live in order to reproduce. So desire for gain is reproduction. But if you're dead, that's irrelevant. So in the hierarchy of human needs, survival is paramount.
And I think for a lot of people across the globe, that's still actually true.
Right.
Well, survival is true.
Shocking amount, right?
And truthfully, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, you're still in the same, you're actually still there, but it is hardwired into us.
Yeah, and unfortunately, right, even in, you would think we're all in danger of the way our bodies react throughout the day. Like, that
we
is just
transplanted. We think there's saber-toothed tigers in the bushes.
Right. Yeah, when an email comes in.
Yes, right? When an email comes in.
Yeah. So when you're looking at how do you get through the primal mind and into the conscious, rational mind, fear is a great way to do it. But the trick with that is once you get full engagement, you have to then properly address the actual concerns you're trying to get across. So it isn't just getting through the bouncer, it's getting introduced and ushered in the right way. So, you know, the idea is you VIP list is probably better than in or out of the club. Like, you want to bring this idea to the primal mind in a way where it sees avoiding pain, maybe some mixed with gain, and then it ushers it in. So you are now escorted to the best. So the rational mind still will make lots of the big decisions in life. But in order to get an at-bat, it has to get through the primal mind in the right way. And the more you can pre-orient it. And so ways to do that, ways to get in, you know, fear and pain is a great attention getter. But you can't use language. You need to use, there's some key concepts. We don't have to go too much in them, but visual is one of the best ways. We can grasp something visually in the primal mind in under 50 milliseconds. So because it had to survive that fast, it has to read things visually and then be able to respond. So, you know, using the fear and then presenting the concept visually then says, okay, this is warrants attention from all systems.
So two things come up for me. One is, as you know, I do a lot of keynoting, and I spend time in the beginning talking about why we have to change and innovate. And that's the fear factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's the reality that we're living in. And I'll never forget someone coming up to me, another speaker, and was like, I think you need to get to the positive faster. That's exactly my response. I was like, there, a little bit. And I'll never forget that, because they were so ingrained in this, you got to get to the solution. Yep. And what I've seen in the evolution of my work is that when I, because I used to not do that, I used to jump right into like, yay, here's all the possibilities. Yeah. But the reality is now that I start with fear,
right.
And I'm not a fear monger, but I start with the reality, right, of change, people pay way more attention for the rest of my time. So that person's comment to me, I just kind of brushed it off and I realized, well, that's why my work is working.
Right, exactly.
Not to be a jerk, but I think it's so important that we, you know, I think when we're in a business meeting too of any kind, we want to jump to, let me show you all the great things I know and all the solutions I'm about to present to you. But if we don't take a moment to stop and understand the pain and articulate the pain, the people on the other side of that table don't pay attention.
That's right. That's exactly right. And just like we were talking about earlier, people want, they don't like to exist in fear and uncomfort. The primal line is like, we got to get out of this, even if it's believing something, some business platitude, right? Like fake it till you make it. Okay, got it, got it. So the real trick is, unless pain is amplified in a real and meaningful way, you're not going to have the full engagement of attention and focus.
Right.
I mean, that is what everyone is seeking, to get the right level of attention and focus for the right amount of time. That's the only way real change, you know, why your work is so great and why you move all these companies is you will spend that time. It's articulating it, but then they have to experience it to some degree, which is how you drive, which is how you drive change. And again, it's, you're ushered into that VIP list, right? And you're like, oh, put this guy in the front row,
right.
full bottle service, all of those things. And the pain can't just be generic. The pain is focused. That really gets the attention.
Well, it has to be relevant pain, right?
Exactly.
Like, I think that's the other challenge we face is people articulate pain that's relevant to them, but not to the people they're talking to. So those are two different things. But I want to look back for a second because what's striking me about the research we've done and this conversation is that, and I don't want to jump too far past this, is we are inundated every day and we are blocking out an unbelievable amount of messages every day. And then we wonder why at the end of the day we're exhausted.
Right, exactly.
Right? Because we're taking in so much stimulus at any given moment. But there's two stimulus that you mentioned. One is visual and one is emotional. And those are the parts, I get the visual. That actually, that didn't surprise me when I dug into that. Because I thought, well, that makes sense. Like we think visually, even storytelling is like closer to visual than just data, right? But visual is so powerful. But the emotion stuff and how much emotion dictates our behavior blew my mind a little bit. Because I thought that it was the other way around going into it. I thought I have a thought, I take an action, and that triggers an emotion.
Right.
But it turns out it's the flip.
It's absolutely the flip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, the evolution of humanity, there's a great quote, I can't remember who said it, but we aren't thinking beings with feelings. We are feeling beings
It's in one of the books.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, emotions are hardwired into every decision. So emotions are commonly misunderstood. I had the same exact thing. I'm like, you just control, you tell those emotions what to do, right?
It's how I respond to the situation.
Exactly, right? And so the limbic system is fundamental to our thought process. So yeah, that is something to account for. And you really cannot get effective action or understanding without it.
So let's, I'm jumping around a little bit, but I thought that was important to articulate. Because I think to me, it goes back to getting into the VIP list.
Yep.
So fear is one of them. Let's talk a little bit about the other ways, because I think that it'll help us manage our lives, particularly when we think about the acceleration of change that we're dealing with and how we're unfortunately as species very gradual in how we change, which is not great given how fast everything else around us is changing. So what have you found are other ways to get past?
All right. So we say, you know, one is visual, and visual can sort of cascade to some of these other concepts as well. One of my favorites are contrast, right? So in order to rapidly sort something out, how is it different than something else?
Yeah.
And you see this with the proliferation of, you know, different membership packages, like within Netflix or Xfinity. So when we have something that we can compare, it allows a cascade of immediate decisions, which saves the thinking mind from having to work too hard. So primal mind loves to see contrast, right? Showing how something is before, how something is after. Those are as old as time, right? And you look at any infomercial, there's always the before, the after. Contrast tells a long, impactful story immediately. especially if it's visually contrast.
So I want to add to that for a second, because I think the cereal aisle at the grocery store, just go with me for a minute.
Yep. Yeah, okay.
Represents life.
Right.
So if you've ever gone, you have kids, you go, yep. you've shopped for cereal, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't have kids, just go down this aisle. You don't like cereal, no. It is an entire...
It's not keto AF, by the
no,
way.
No, it is not.
But there are two new cereals out that are both keto, by the way.
Oh, that's exciting.
They're so excited. Oh, I'm so excited.
I know. I had to stop even doing checks. I started with gluten-free and I've moved on. But here's what I find fascinating about it. It is a row of same. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what oftentimes we make mistakes around this. So, So here's what happens. So one company goes, oh, fiber is important. So 10% fiber. Right. And then the next box says 15% fiber. Right. And then the next box says 15% fiber plus vitamin B, whatever. Right. And then the next one says 20% fiber plus great taste. And the next one. So, but it's more of the same, like they're all trying to one up each other. And so what happens to us, right, is we bypass all of it. Cause we're like, oh, I don't know. That's just all of the same, to your point about contrast. Yeah. And then you see something down like next to it, that's like, all the flavor, it doesn't even mention fiber, and you're like, and that's not the best contrast, but you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's so different than everything else on the shelf.
Right.
That's actually the one that you gravitate towards. And we don't realize how lacking in contrast we are in our lives, and how we even, let me take it to a personal level, how we present ourselves and the brand that we are, because we're trying to blend in with the people we work with, live with in our communities, we're actually lacking contrast from that personal level. And then from a marketing perspective, you're not fucking paying attention to anything. It just is like everything else.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And one of the things you said, right, incremental gains have very little impact. And it's noisy. There's not high contrast. So, you know, instead of being the fastest, the best, or whatever, by a little bit, to be the only, that's market contrast.
Right.
And you said that before.
In different ways, but what I didn't connect before was that it's the primal brain and its need for contrast to get to the VIP list.
Exactly.
That should be driving how we think about decisions and things that we put out into the world.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, contrast is a very powerful tool. Another one that we find works very well that the primal mind enjoys and will put you on the VIP list, or at least understands, and then we'll usher you in, is tangible.
Yeah.
And so when the primal mind senses concepts like honor or justice, it's like, what does that mean versus a table?
Yeah.
Right. So trying to take your concepts and make them tangible is something, I mean, it was built for the physical world, for survival. And tangibleness is essential to help pull some of these concepts that take a lot to figure out. So that's another way to get ushered in. Again, once you are in there, it's fine to engage, but you know, it's easy to say, talk about courage, and then you show a picture of a child and a mom defending against a grizzly bear. That is tangible illustration of courage. So if you just talk about courage, it takes forever to figure out, but you can visually show it. So that's another way through.
It was interesting. I was just thinking about, you know, as you know, we went through a lot of changes on our website recently and made it way more visual and a lot less text.
Yes.
Which in a funny way was hard for me, even though I know it, because I'm too in it.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, every word matters. Everything's important. And of course, our sales went up the minute we went away from words and went to visuals.
Right.
So just as an example, and I think in the marketing you do, you see that too. And it's, to me, what's really interesting about that is the combination of, or the challenge, I should say, in that is figuring out how to create something tangible in a cloud world, in a digital world,
right,
which I think you guys have gotten really good at because of the work on the primal brain you've done. But it's an interesting challenge.
Yeah, definitely on two levels, right? If we go back to like the tennis example, you have a tremendous amount, and most clients do this, right? This is almost universal. You have a tremendous amount of built-in and learned competency and understanding, and you have mental models that build on each other over time. And you expect then, so you have a high degree of fluency mentally in these areas, and the client has, the potential customer has zero or very vague understanding, so you have to meet them where they're at. And so breaking it down, what is the most universal would be visual and some of these other concepts we're talking about. So it is effortful because you have worked through that for decades and have a degree of proficiency that's world class. That is, don't ask the best in the world to teach a newbie.
Right.
Federer teaching my son how to play tennis.
Right. He can't break it down anymore.
He would be like, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
So, that is where, you know, that dynamic we see play out a lot of places.
I think the struggle that we have with that is for a lot of us, whether we're entrepreneurs like us or working in companies, we don't want anyone to call our baby ugly or to minimize our baby, right, which is how we feel. But the reality is that minimization is what gets it across.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Einstein has the most wrongly attributed quotes, but it's, you know, something to the effect that, like, it's very difficult to make something simple, right? Any fool can make something complex.
Right.
And there's also, as your understanding evolves, there's nuances that are important, but you can't start there, right?
Right.
So it's almost like dumbing it down too simply. And like, okay, so I'm going to take this, you know, your incredible book of knowledge on innovation, how to innovate as an individual, to break that down into like a cartoon,
right,
of pictures, right, seems, is hard.
Well, it'd be hard for me to do. I'd need help from someone.
Right.
To do that.
Well, exactly. And like, that's where, you know, coming in from that capacity is the first thing we tied in. How do we tell the essence of the story in a way that it gets through the primal mind, in a way where the rational mind is predisposed to listen and understand the message?
So I kind of feel like it's a little bit like online dating. And just go with me for a second.
Do go. Yeah, I cannot wait to hear this.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.